This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Having a Teflon coating is now a euphemism for people and politicians and companies, which nothing sticks to. Somehow, insults, charges, and proof of bad behavior just slide right off. Teflon is also a non-stick coating that helps food release easily from cookware. It's a trademark of DuPont, one of the world's largest chemical companies. And for many years, Teflon was manufactured using C8, a perfluorooctanoic acid, or PFOA, that has been linked to certain cancers and other serious illnesses. C8 is again the subject of a major class action lawsuit. The question, asked Brooklyn-based journalist Sharon Lerner, is whether newly revealed evidence against DuPont will stick to its slick surface. Sharon Lerner covers health and environment and is the author of a three-part investigative series for The Intercept on the case that is going to trial in September. Sharon, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So what is C8, also known as PFOA, and where is it found?
Okay, so C8 is a chemical. It's called a surfactant, which is kind of like a soapy, slippery substance that was used for many years by DuPont and other companies to manufacture, as you said, Teflon, though really hundreds and I believe thousands of products, Stainmaster carpet and Gore-Tex, and there are a lot of kind of stain-resistant, water-resistant products, fabrics and clothing, that kind of thing. And we now have this chemical. Most of us, virtually all of us, 99.7% of Americans have it, some amount in their blood. It is a man-made chemical that didn't exist a century ago. So we know that the chemical that is in our blood came from exposure one way or another to C8, either through products or through its seepage into the environment from manufacturers and companies that used it. We talk a lot about Teflon. You talked about Teflon in the introduction. In fact, Teflon isn't the major source of exposure, we think, for the chemical in our blood, but it is perhaps one source because there are trace amounts in it.
There are firefighting foam, fast food wrappers, microwave popcorn bags, bicycle lubricants, ski wax, pizza boxes.
Yes. Yep.
It's a lot of places. But again, it's in the blood of 99.7% of Americans. How did it become so present in human beings?
Well, it's in very, very low levels. And I think it came, we think, we're not 100% sure where it all came from, but I think it came from exposure through products. People have measured, particularly with the microwave popcorn bags, that was a big source of exposure. And they think also the carpet coatings are a particularly big source of exposure, especially for infants and young kids who crawl through them. Mm. But the piece that I write about is also about people who were contaminated through emissions from a plant in West Virginia. It was a DuPont plant, and some of the chemical that they were using down there went into the Ohio River and into the air and in the soil there and ultimately into the drinking water that tens of thousands of people drank. And that's what the suit is about.
It's about harm in many ways. Which kind of diseases are thought to be caused by exposure to C8?
Yeah, so there's been a big class action suit, which was settled in 2005, over these contaminated water districts down there. And they're in West Virginia and Ohio. And as a result of that settlement, what happened was it was a very unusual settlement. And they didn't just, you know, give out money and call it a day. What they did was they took some of the money and they used it to do a health study where they gathered blood and did medical information interviews for tens of thousands of people. And then they used that data to look at what the effects were on the people in the area. And they had this panel of scientists who spent 7 years, or actually eight, I think, going over all this data and trying to figure out if there was any impact, any connection between human health and exposure. And what they found was that, in fact, six diseases were probably linked. They were more likely than not to be caused by exposure. And the six diseases were ulcerative colitis, which is like a bowel disease, preeclampsia, testicular cancer, kidney cancer, high cholesterol, which isn't exactly a disease, but I feel like I must have missed one.
Thyroid.
Yeah, thyroid disease as well, right? So these cases that are coming up now, basically, and there are about 3,500 of them, are the people who drank the water in this area who ended up developing these diseases. And the way they left, they were at the settlement, they said, if any diseases are linked, if the people who drank this water developed them, then they can sue. And these are the suits that are coming up now.
So you talked about the emissions from this plant in West Virginia and also some seepage into water on the banks of the Ohio River. So I'm guessing for a long time, C8 was just actually sort of blew out into the air. Were there any regulations about how it should be disposed of?
Well, C8 is one of tens of thousands of unregulated chemicals. So there really weren't rules that were imposed from the outside on this particular chemical. If you have something that you believe to be toxic, you're supposed to report some of those things to the EPA, And of course, you're not supposed to dump toxic materials, you know, into the soil and water. That is partly what happened. In the 60s, they were actually dumping PFOA into the ocean directly. We don't know exactly how much was disposed of this way, but I did read in some of the documents, the historical documents, that they were filling up barrels with this toxic waste once they realized it was toxic and not something that they wanted to just dump in the local dump. And they were putting it on barges and shipping it out into the Atlantic and dumping it there. In 1972, I believe that stopped when ocean dumping became illegal. But we also know that a couple hundred barrels were buried in the banks of the Ohio River. But, you know, worse was just that much of it went into unlined landfills. And we know now that from those unlined landfills, it was going directly into the water table. And it was also going out through smokestacks. And it was also being dumped directly into the Ohio River.
We asked reporter Sharon Lerner about the toxic man-made chemical known as C8 that DuPont used to create numerous products, specifically the highly profitable line of Teflon products, and was found in other common products from microwave popcorn bags to fast food wrappers until it was banned for being linked to a number of cancers and diseases. Well, despite that, C8 is in the bloodstream of 99.7% of people in the U.S., as a result of the terms of a class action settlement back in 2005, DuPont is now facing a new round of class action lawsuits, which charge that the company knew about the risks of C8 exposure and covered it up. Sharon, it's only recently that access to DuPont's internal documents did reveal a systemic cover-up of the health risks of C8, which you compare to the cover-ups of Big Tobacco back in the 90s. Well, how long did DuPont know that C8 was a harmful substance?
Well, first, let me say that these documents have been coming out over the course of about 10 years. I want to pay homage to the reporters before me who have been diving into this story. And I feel like we kind of went into a ridiculous amount of detail. But definitely some of the story has been kind of seeping out, if you will, over the past decade. And what we found was that the company suspected or had reports of suspected toxicity of this chemical back in 1954, which was just a few years after they first introduced it and were using it. And they gradually studied it and learned a lot about it. They were actually quite meticulous about and rigorous about looking at their products. They were the first company to have an in-house laboratory that looked at toxicity and thought about the effect of chemicals on consumers and workers. And so one of the things they did was take a careful look at C8 and, you know, examine how it affected animals. They tested lab rats. They tested dogs. They found that it increased their liver size. It was the first thing they noticed. But eventually they found all sorts of different ways it affected animals. In large amounts, it killed some of them, which I guess isn't that surprising because large amounts of a lot of things would kill animals. But rats ended up developing tumors on their testicles. There were workers' studies eventually that showed elevated, like with the lab animals, that showed abnormal liver function tests. It seemed to affect cholesterol of dogs. And then they did begin to see different, elevated cancer rates, certain cancers in some of their plants, which may have been related as well.
And they knew this. They were communicating it internally, but not publicly. Until when?
There were some things that they reported to the EPA, some, though not most. And then really the tide turned in 2001, I believe it was, when an attorney named Rob Bellott, basically, he was suing the company because one of his clients, a farmer in the area, had sold part of his land to the company, and they had been dumping C8 on his land, and it had gotten into the water that his cows drank, and his entire herd of cattle, hundreds of cattle, had died. And so Rob Bellott was representing this man, and in the course of the lawsuit, he did discovery. He asked for documents relating to PFOA and got a whole bunch of material that made him realize that it was dangerous, that the company knew it had seeped beyond its plant, and he brought it to the EPA. He kind of sent these huge packages to the Attorney General, to the EPA, to the West Virginia DEP, and he became hell-bent on exposing the problem.
Yeah, Rob Bellott is one of the people you profiled that's just doggedly pursued this case. But DuPont was not entirely secretive about their findings. After a study showing rats exposed to C8 had babies with birth defects, they decided to transfer pregnant women away from any C8 work assignments. So clearly, they knew that the danger was there. To your mind, were they taking the proper precautions or responsibility?
Well, certainly not on that issue. And that is an issue that resulted in they were fined ultimately by the EPA over that because the EPA felt it was a violation of they were withholding information. And the reason they felt that was because DuPont had some communication with the EPA after this other company, 3M, reported a study about rats and C8 to the EPA. And in this study, they showed that rats that were exposed to PFOA were more likely to have pups with birth defects. And so 3M told EPA about the study, and then DuPont had a conversation, I think, I'm not sure if it was in a letter or not, but they had some communication with the EPA about that. What they didn't tell them was that after that study, they began tracking some of their own workers who were pregnant and working in the Teflon division. They were looking at somewhere between 8 and 10 pregnant women, and either one or two had babies with facial deformities. One of them was unconfirmed, and I couldn't track her down. The other one, I spoke with her and interviewed both her and her son. And in any case, whether it was one or two or 8 or 10, it's quite a big number considering the overall incidence of birth defects in the overall population. And it should have been told to the EPA, and it certainly should have been told to the women themselves. And it wasn't.
Well, I'd like to go back to your comparison of DuPont's behavior with Big Tobacco and DuPont not being, again, the only company who was using C8. Why do you say that? How do you see them protecting this secret or keeping it from the public in a concerted way?
Well, the parallels with tobacco, I think, are many. There's a huge amount of money involved. This is a chemical that made many, many billions of dollars. It was something that was the subject of a cover-up. As you say, they were very concerned that this information not get out. And you'll see in part three a lot of work to ease the path of the chemical through the regulatory system and also to kind of preserve its profitability as long as possible, which isn't surprising, I guess, for a company and a publicly held company.
Now there are nearly 3,500 personal injury lawsuits that have been filed against DuPont for life-threatening conditions. Do plaintiffs now have to prove that C8 is responsible for these illnesses, or that DuPont knowingly put employees and citizens at risk by continuing to use and manufacture and dispose of C8?
Well, the question of whether it caused it is actually not on the table for these particular lawsuits, because remember we were talking about the unique settlement a little while ago. One of the terms of the settlement agreement was that whatever the science panel comes up with as probable links will be accepted for these cases as the cause. And while the company is allowed, this is sort of a confusing distinction that I'm a bit confused about, but the company is supposed to be allowed to dispute individual causation but accept general causation. So I don't think they're not allowed to contest the idea that there's a relationship between exposure to C8 and these diseases.
There's so much to this story and so much to your investigation. A number of players and actions and inactions responsible for getting this case to court. You interviewed, you know, dozens of people with very, very powerful stories affected by this. Any of those stories stay with you as kind of emblematic of this case?
Yeah. I mean, it's been really interesting talking to folks down there. The people living in West Virginia and Ohio, in that area in the Chemical Valley, it's called, they have a deep knowledge of the company. And, you know, DuPont is very big down there. They're a big employer, and they're just a big presence. And I was really struck by the fact that even the people who are plaintiffs in this case really appreciate, feel sort of mixed about it. They feel this, you know, the appreciation for the jobs, which is a huge factor in how this company is present down there, right? So I talked to these people who've had cancer, who have been bankrupt by it, who, you know, came close to death, that kind of thing. And still they have a lot of room in their hearts for like, oh, you know, I feel bad saying this because my friend works there, or my cousin works there, or my dad used to work there. There's that. But I'm also struck by the fact that even the people who were so involved and so close to the company, after reading the piece, felt like that they hadn't known so much of what was happening, and they're so angry. They're angry that things that could have affected them, could well have affected them in their water, they didn't know about, and that a lot of the decision-making around this chemical came down to, seems to have been motivated by profit. And I think when, you know, it's your kidney and your child or your, you know, that doesn't feel acceptable.
Well, Sharon, how about for you? I mean, this is just one chemical out of many, many toxic chemicals, and you've sort of traced the path of how it's moved through at least one small bit of the population. Do you feel uneasy at all about everything that we come in contact with on a daily basis?
One thing that you will come out more clearly in Part 3 is that this is not the most dangerous chemical on Earth. It definitely seems to cause disease. It seems to be linked to a big number of diseases, possibly far more than the 6 that were linked by the science panel. But the rates of elevation over what you would expect in the population aren't huge. So it's kind of got this subtle effect, which is really how it got to fly under the radar for so long. And I do think that there are many chemicals like that we don't know about. And there's actually quite a bit of research on this idea that there's a cumulative effect of low-level exposure to so many things. And we are exposed to so many things, and a lot of them we don't know about. And so, you know, it's hard not to think about, you know, the mysterious rise in certain diseases and in cancers and, you know, in autism and all sorts of things. And then you look at these, you know, this sort of uncharted rise in exposure to numerous chemicals, and you think, well, could there be a connection? There might be. And some of it is being studied and understood and documented. I think there are some connections.
Well, Sharon Lerner, thank you for your thorough work and for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sharon Lerner, she's a Brooklyn-based journalist and author who covers health and the environment. She's written a three-part series for Intercept, the first called DuPont and the Chemistry of Deception, and the second, which is breaking down the case against DuPont, are already online at Intercept. The third is yet to come, and you'll find links to parts one and two at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.